Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. Today, a very special guest, a recurrent guest, Mac Lancaster. Hello, Mac.
Hello, Dr. Anbar. It's my privilege to be back again.
Absolutely. I think you should have your own show someday. You're a great interviewer.
Thank you. I likely will. After your lead.
So, the theme of today's show is going to be how we pick a career or a job. Max, in the middle of doing this, I did this 3 or 4 decades ago, but we thought we would review some certain steps that people should consider, and hopefully sharing our experiences will help people think about their own lives. So just a quick introduction for Mac. He's a lifelong musician, scholar, and activist. And these roles have progressively converged as he's pursuing a career in counseling. He's taken music lessons throughout his life, attended community college as a high school student, and participated in research, clinical, and academic ventures as they arose. This all has provided him with a diverse set of experiences that have shown him what he wants to do. Listeners to this show have heard bits and pieces of my biography. We'll get to it later. I'll talk to you about how I ended up where I'm at. But again, welcome, Max, to joining us today.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I think it's a really important topic to discuss, and I know that as I'm shadowing you in patient sessions, it's something that comes up time and time again, especially with adolescents, of course, is what do I do? Am I doing the right thing? Am I setting myself up for the most success that I possibly can? And is all of this even going to be meaningful in the end? So, yeah, I think that we're going to hit on some of those topics and really have a good discussion with it.
Right, so maybe we can start. You're closer to adolescence than I am. Maybe you probably remember more. I memory changes, so my memory, my adolescence is probably not exactly how it was. But maybe you can share some of your thinking about it as you, I guess, middle teen years started thinking about what you wanted to do.
True, yeah, and it's funny that you say that because I noticed myself looking back, even though it was just a couple years ago now, with a different set of eyes. Because as a teenager, I think the most defining part of the experience is this sense of desperation, and it's a strange sense because what exactly are adolescents so desperate for? I'm not sure looking back, but in the midst of it, it felt like I was desperate to find all of the answers to life, find out what I needed to do, find out all of the friends that I needed to have, find out the relationships, who I was, and it felt like if I didn't find that out immediately, I was going to be left behind. Now, flash forward to a 23-year-old, I still have a slight sense of that sense of if I don't pick it up now, if I don't pick up the pace, I might be left behind. But I think that my perspective is much more widened, that life is a lifelong journey, and we're all figuring it out. No matter how old you are, no matter how much of a master you are in your particular profession, you're still going to make changes, you're still going to adapt, and nothing is set in stone. So I think that as a teenager, I had this view that I needed to figure it out now, and what I figure out has to be perfect. And now I understand that that view was just one of many in a long line that is pushing me towards what I will eventually be, but that I never need to view anything as ultimate because I can always change. And so I guess what I'm saying is that as you get older, you feel a greater sense of freedom. And so the earlier that you can accept that, I think the better. And we'll talk a little bit more about some specific ways that I engaged with with that sense of freedom.
Right. So, you know, I think as an adolescent, you have enough knowledge that you think you know what's going on, and things are crystal clear in some ways because you really haven't considered all the different possibilities, but you don't consider it, so you think this is how it is. And when people tell you, well, not, that's not real, you say, well, you don't know what you're talking about. I am the next generation. I'm much more aware. I just had a long discussion with an adolescent today. He's 14 and a half about his computer use and regulating. And he was convinced that the way to learn how to regulate yourself is to be given an opportunity to do so without any consequences. And I was explaining to him that that's not really how humans work. They say that, you know, humans learn from consequences. If I put my hand to fire, it burns. I'm not going to do that again. If there's no consequence, they don't learn. And he said, but in an ideal world, shouldn't people just do what's right even though there are no consequences? I said, I suppose so, but we're not living in such a world. But it didn't make sense to him because he was very crystal clear that I was wrong. And that was kind of funny.
That is funny, and a very adolescent approach to the whole topic. What comes to mind for me is the experiment with rats, where you give a rat a button that stimulates cocaine in their brain, or a rat that, or they also have the option to press a button that will give them food. And every time they're going to press the button that gives them cocaine stimulation. And so, in general, mammals, creatures with a dopamine reward system, are not able to regulate as well as we would like to. And so, yeah, in an ideal world, we would all be able to do whatever we wanted and not have to worry about consequences and just be able to, I don't know, live moderately and live successfully. But our brains are not adapted for that. When you mix in the modern society where we have all of these, we always talk about it, these supernormal stimuli, right? Like video games. Video games are a supernormal stimulus. It's going to put your brain in a state that you would not normally achieve from regular interactions with our world. And so anything that is highly rewarding, with which most of our society is, not meant for us to be able to engage with it moderately, unless we actually train ourselves to, which in case, yeah, that could be some sort of ideal society, but it takes a lot of awareness and a lot of, yeah, common sense, which as we know is not so common.
But, you know, taking a step back even further, I'm not sure that we as humans, I mean, we start off with not much knowledge. If we can learn without saying, well, this works, if this doesn't work, because if you don't have this doesn't work, you don't really learn much. You just do whatever.
Yeah, it's so true. Like you said, I mean, stick your hand in a fire, you learn to never do that again because it hurts you. And we see that with people who have, I forget, you might know what it's exactly called, but I remember talking about it in my psych classes, the disorder where you have no pain sensation. It's a lot harder for them to adapt to the world because they might be doing something that is what would normally send a physical signal of pain, but is not in that case, which could lead to traumatic injury. I mean, for instance, if you have something sharp leaning on your wrist, you're going to move your wrist away. But if you can't feel that sensation, you might get your hand cut off because you don't have the ability to adapt. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, consequences are how we survive and thrive. Are you still there?
We are here, yes.
Okay, perfect. So I think next we can talk a little bit about some hobbies and activities that have pushed me in a direction that have allowed me to explore a greater sense of who I am. Because I think that's something else that we need to talk about in line of job and career. And for me, my journey really began with music. I started playing music at the age of 9, and this is why I mentioned it to you to say at the beginning of the radio show, because it's just such an important part of my development regarding confidence. I was a kid who I had dyslexia, so I was unconfident about my reading, and I've learned how to do that better with time. But one thing that I picked up right away that just really was my own world where I could fully express myself without really thinking was music. And being on stage for the first time as a 10-year-old through a program that I'll discuss called School of Rock was really that initial feeling of confidence in my life where I felt I could take something and just run with it and be proud of what I accomplished. And so, yeah, I wanted to talk about School of Rock, which is an extracurricular activity program where about a dozen, 18 or so kids under the age of 18 come together, and over the course of 4 months, they learn maybe 20 or so songs from a specific genre or artist. For instance, my first ever season was Aerosmith, and then I did the Beatles, and I did the Zeppelin. And so after those 4 months, then you play a couple shows on a big stage in a local venue, and all of the parents, all of your friends come, and it's a really fun event. And so doing that not only showed me that I could perform live and that people were actually enjoying what I had to offer, but it also showed me that I could learn songs and kind of compete with my fellow musicians. And not only could I grow as a result, but they could grow. So I think it's really important, whether it's music, sports, debate, Model UN, putting kids in situations where they can compete with each other, but not in any malicious way whatsoever. It's strictly in a beneficial way for you to better yourself. I think that putting kids in those programs from the time they're young are going to build confidence. And so if you are a kid listening to this, I encourage you to think about what you're interested in, think about what you might want to do, and just go join a club that's related to it. And if you're a parent, I think I recommend taking on their interest or passing on one of your own and seeing what they run with.
So it's interesting. This is really, again, feedback. You perform and you get feedback, and that helps you grow. And in thinking about it, I was thinking like deaf people who cannot hear never develop normal speech because they don't get the feedback they need to for their speech. So much of what we learn in preparation for a career involves feedback, and I think School of Rock gave that to you, and you grew as a result of that experience.
Absolutely, yeah, and I think now that I think about it more, it's the feedback from others which then translates to a self-feedback that is accurate, right? Because what we don't want to instill into kids is self-feedback that is pure grandiose, right? We don't want little chumps running around thinking that everything they do is perfect, right? But we don't want kids thinking that nothing they do is great, or that, oh man, I'm just a loser, or oh man, everyone else is better than me, right? We want a balance. We want kids to be able to be confident and grow and have that be a self-fulfilling process where through just critical thinking, but not overly critical thinking, they're able to put themselves in a new direction. And so yeah, instilling that feedback.
When did you start asking yourself, what am I going to do with my life? Like, did you ever think I wanted to be a professional musician? Did you go through that phase?
I have always kind of thought, what do I want to do with my life? And I did think about if I wanted to be a professional musician, but I never really took it seriously. It was always more of a side hobby. And this was probably for a couple of reasons. One, my dad was a music major. He majored in jazz, and he ended up being a teacher, which is the common thing that you do as a music major if you're not going to go into the music industry. You're going to be a music teacher, which is a part of the music industry, but it's just separate, right? So I think something that was instilled in me when I was young was having a realistic expectation of the entertainment industry, because a lot of people who are gearing towards music, art, drama, whatever it is, they think that if they work hard and just go for it, they can achieve that. And although that's true, even if you achieve it, there's a lot that can go wrong and can make you feel unworthy in that type of industry. And I really never wanted to compete my whole life to prove myself on that level. And so I figured that I would keep music for my own hobby, use it to better myself, use it to make friends and build connections and just have fun. And then on the side, for my career, I could do something else, which I always wanted that to be something that could help people. And although music can help people in more ways than most things can on the planet, I wanted to be able to tangibly help people and help people one person at a time, changing lives, basically, which is how I was kind of always interested in something psychologically related.
Now, so for teenagers listening to this, keep in mind that things that are a lot of fun that are creative, like writing or poetry or art or music, and then things like sports, which, again, are a lot of fun, rarely do they make careers. I mean, some people obviously do, but if you're considering a career in any of those areas, first of all, you have to spend a lot of time doing this, especially like sports. You know, it's almost 24/7 in preparation if you're going to become a professional athlete. Or with the arts, you have to have a lot of luck as well to establish a career. You can write a great novel, and if nobody reads it, or nobody knows about it, it's not going to be a source of revenue. So, when you get involved in hobbies and things that are important to you, you want to ask yourself, is this something I can depend on long-term for income? Or is this, like Mac is saying, something I can do for the rest of my life, but it's going to supplement a main job?
Exactly. Exactly. And I think, I mean, there's a lot of careers out there that are a lot of work and take a significant amount of luck to get them off the ground. I mean, for instance, being a business owner is something where you're going to work 24 hours a day for probably 5 to 10 years before you see any gains. And that can take some luck, but it also takes a ton of hard work, right? And I think it's the same for maybe a little more intense, of course, for sports and the entertainment industry. And so I think it's important, like we talked about, to have realistic expectations. One thing that I hear a lot of the time in the sessions that we do is the desire to be a streamer these days, or like a YouTuber. That's kind of the main goal of the entertainment industry, or the main goal to get into the entertainment industry is to be a streamer. And I always try to remind kids that it's great to aspire to be a streamer, open up a Twitch account, like look up some YouTube videos on how you can actually make that happen, because there are people who do, right? But you also have to understand that you're competing with every other 10 through 25-year-old who wants to be a streamer and wants to play video games all day, because that's an awesome life and it sounds super fun. And because of that, it's very competitive. And so with all of that fun comes great levels of competition. And if you've looked into this, there's this thing called the YouTuber burnout, which they talk about how after 5 years of having a successful YouTube channel, it's actually really hard to stay motivated, because there's never a point where it gets any easier. You still have to work every single day, all day, to make sure that your channel, your source of entertainment that you're putting out into the world is still viable for people to search up and find. I listened to a podcast called Smartlist, too, with a couple famous actors, including Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and Sean Hayes, and they talk about it, too. These guys are, like, I don't know, they're not A-list actors, they're B-list or so. They're pretty famous, successful people in our society, and they even talk about how it's really difficult for them to get a job. There's no consistency. No matter how good you are, unless you're like Leonardo DiCaprio, there's no guarantee that that call for a new part, a new role, is going to come tomorrow. So if you want to go into the entertainment biz, that's totally fine, but you got to know that.
I went to a presentation by a TikToker who does TikToks on Talmud, which is a Jewish book of the Jewish books of learning, and she's gotten quite a following because it's an unusual account, and she posts a video, a 3-minute video every day about the lesson of the day from the Talmud, and she spends 8 hours a day preparing these 3-minute videos. So, and then if Congress passes a law that outlaws TikTok, what then?
Right? Yeah. Well, oh my gosh. Yeah. You're talking about a thing that I talk about with my little brother all the time, which is this world of streaming and digital entertainment could all be eliminated within a second. And I'll specify that. So let's talk about Netflix. Netflix, they have all of these proprietary films that only they own, and they don't allow any other streamers to stream. And so if they take it off their platform, the director, the actors, all the producers, everyone involved in those films, they just had their art, their portfolio completely ripped away, and that is solely Netflix's choice. Just like what you mentioned, Congress or the Supreme Court could be like, hey, no more TikTok. Netflix could do it with any of their films. Hulu could do it with any of their films. YouTube could do it with any of their videos. So that's the scary thing, too, is putting your sole career, all of your vested entertainment into one source that could be completely eliminated. So maybe that's worth thinking about if you do plan on going into some sort of entertainment business. Thinking about how you can make some more tangible physical copies of what you do to ensure that you have the proprietary ownership.
So going back to you for a moment, so you knew you wanted to help people, but that's there's many ways of doing that. So as a middle to late teen, what do you do with that knowledge? How did you progress from high school to starting community college classes, for example?
Yeah, great question. So I knew that in order to help people, I had to get out of high school as fast as possible because, and not only out of high school, but into my future career. And so I really wanted to, high school was really dragging me down in a lot of ways. It was making my big ideas about what I wanted to do feel just unachievable, and I was kind of lost. So I looked into programs, and I can talk more about the community college program that I did in the next segment, but I ended up finding this program through the help of my parents called Grossmont Middle College High School. And I realized that if I go to this program, I can start college earlier, I can start my career earlier, I can start research earlier, I can do everything that I wanted to do a little earlier. And, yeah, I'll talk about that in a bit.
Yes, I'm very curious to hear about the Grossmont College High School experience, which we'll do right after the break. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Coming attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Anbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Anbar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Anbar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterpointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar, special guest, Mac Lancaster, and we're discussing today how to pick a career if you are a teenager or young adult. And Mac was about to tell us about his high school community college experience.
Yeah, and I want to preface, too, because a lot of this is because of the influence of my parents, and I'm fortunate enough to have a mother who is a psychologist and a father who's a teacher who have been supporting me my whole life. And so I was at a private school who specialized in gifted and social and emotional education, and I wanted to do a complete left turn and try public school for a change. and knowing that I could get into this middle college program afterwards, right? So this was kind of all of the plan from the time I was in middle school. And middle college high school is a really cool program where you can start it as a junior and you finish it as a senior, of course, in high school. And you take high school English and high school history, right? And those are your only two high school classes. And then the rest of the day, you have to take community college classes. And you have to enroll in at least 6 community college credits per semester. And so I ended up graduating my senior year with 42 credits for college. And most of those didn't end up counting towards my general education, which later I had realized they should have. But what they ended up doing was pushing me in the direction of knowing what I wanted to do. So, for instance, the first ever community college class that I took was business law. I thought, maybe I want to go into business. Maybe I want to be a lawyer. Lawyers can help people. Business people can help people by making money and spreading it to the community, right? And so I took that class. I realized that it was completely boring for me and something that I did not want to do at all. There's a lot of court cases, a lot of understanding, I don't know, various sets of paperwork. It's not my interest. And so I took several more classes, right? I took economics, I took poli sci, I took biology, I took chemistry, and eventually I took psychology, which was in the back of my mind the whole time because, as I said, my mom was a psychologist, and it had kind of always been a theme of my life, is psychology, understanding that your perspective is different and understanding other people's perspectives can help you have a greater sense of empathy. And so taking my first psychology class was, it made me feel wide awake as to what I wanted to do. It spoke to a part of my soul that was deep within, and I felt the clarity that, oh my gosh, the neuroscience is especially interesting, because I had known about psychology. I'd heard about Freud and Jung, and probably like the pop psychology terms that most people know. But understanding the neurochemicals that are at play that create, our sense of reality, our sense of behavior and cognition, that was mind-blowing to me, and I wanted to study that. And so I ended up pursuing neuroscience as a result. And had I not taken that class when I was in 11th grade, then I might have wasted an additional couple years worth of time. I definitely would have wasted a couple years worth of time in high school, just taking random high school general education classes that would not have given me that specific understanding. And so I was lucky enough to know about this community college program, which is why I recently wrote about community colleges in a Psychology Today blog, because a lot of people at my high school didn't know about that program. A lot of people still don't know about programs like this, and I hope just to spread the information that there are other options out there if high school isn't working for you. And high school doesn't work for a lot of people because it's mostly about conformity and not about actual academic awareness.
You actually illustrated a really important point here, which is you were exposed to various classes and you find out, oh, I really like this. And one of the things I counsel middle to late teenagers, don't be so quick to find a career. I have one teenager I'm working with, you happen to know him as well, who is focused on becoming a physician and is looking to do a 6-year college MD program. And I personally think that's young. When you're a middle teen, late teen, you haven't been exposed to that many things yet. And so if you go to a traditional high school program and you have not had a chance to go to college yet, when you go to college, take a broad-based curriculum. Don't go to a business college because you think you want to become a businessman or a businesswoman. If you are going to go into business, it's fine to have a broad career or a broad education, because whatever you learn in biology and in the arts may actually impact your business someday. Maybe you'll do business with someone in those fields and you'll have working knowledge in that. So even if you know you want to go into business or medicine or any other field, I encourage you to take a broad approach as a college student, if you haven't done it as a high school student already, so you'll be exposed to different things. You might actually change your mind. Another thing I often counsel kids is this: just because a career seems perfect to you right now, or whatever, near perfect, it doesn't mean you're going to feel the same way a half year later, a year later, and certainly not 10 years later. So to commit to a career at a relatively young age seems a little bit idealistic, I guess, putting it mildly.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, it's a naive sense, and it's one that we all embody when we're young, because we, like we talked about, we think we have an idea of the way the world works, and we want to solidify that as soon as possible. But it's just not how reality is. So I think a good place to jump off of what you just mentioned is continuing my story. So I decided to go into neuroscience, right? And what do? I go to UCSD. I'm like, I'm going to be a neuroscientist guy. I'm going to be head researcher. I'm going to change the world through research. I changed my idea again from tangibly helping people one-on-one to globally helping people through a change of scientific knowledge, right? And so what happens? I go to UCSD. I'm lucky enough to get into UCSD. And I enter some research labs, and I completely do not like it. It is, again, not a fit for me. I love what we're talking about. I love the information, the neuroscience, psychology, but the actual research process and being in a darkened lab with only other mice and, like, metal cages and SPSS data points can be a little depressing. And I have talked to other researchers who agree to that, but they just love it. It's what they do. It's the right fit. So just because something seems enamoring, something seems really cool in the beginning, doesn't even mean that that's the path for you. But it might mean that it's adjacent to the path that's right for you, which for me was clinical work, which is right next door to research work. And so after a couple years worth of research experience, I finally had my first ever foray into clinical work through Centerpoint Medicine, working with you, Dr. Ambar. And this is what really has solidified into my mind that I got to work with people. I got to work with kids, especially one-on-one, and I want to do it in a clinical setting where I can be the leader, essentially. Because in research, even if you are leading the research team, it's very much cut and dry, by the book, by the process, and there's not a lot of freedom there. Even if you're following a treatment plan, right, a protocol, when you're working with patients, there's still freedom in terms of, I don't know, the words that you exchange, the way that you look at them, the conversation that you have, the interpersonal connection that you build, as we know, the therapeutic. So that, I have realized, is the path for me through years and years of trial and error. But I wouldn't really call any of it an error. I would just call all of it a discovery period.
Discovery and growth. Well, you leaped from UCSD to working with me, but a big life event occurred between the two. I think we should explore that and how you reacted to it. And our next segment, we'll be right back. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At CenterPoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar. Our special guest, Mac Lancaster. We're talking about how he found his career path. And Mac, you were attending UCSD, wanted to go to neurosciences. So tell, describe what happened.
Yeah, and it's funny, too. We started this whole discussion off by talking about how memory is sometimes elusive, or it can make the past seem different. And at this point, I feel much different about the past. I feel as though I had my my career path solidified from the beginning, but no, that was another process. So at the end of my experience at UCSD as a senior, I had applied to one and only one school, and that was SDSU's graduate master's program in psychology. I wanted to stay local, and honestly, I didn't do that much research for other viable programs. To be honest, I didn't do that much research into what a career in psychology would entail or what the next steps were. I just kind of had this idea. I want to be Dr. Mac. I want to go to SDSU right across the street from where I live. Just keep going to school, keep doing it, keep hammering away at this degree. A very undergrad mindset. And I got an interview, which is great, 100% success rate, and then I didn't get in, so 0% success rate. And I was so dejected. I was very bummed, to say the least, at the end of my senior year of college, not having any prospects for grad school, not knowing what I was going to do, not even knowing if I was in the right field anymore because I didn't get into the one school that I wanted to go to. And I was really having a bit of an existential crisis in that regard. I was questioning, should I change paths, essentially? And so it's June 2023, and I'm thinking, I guess May 2023, and I'm thinking, okay, I want money in my life, and I don't even know that I want to research, so I'm going to go be a real estate agent. That sounds like a good plan. I can always use psychology and all the information that I've collected throughout my whole life to be a real estate agent in San Diego, make a lot of money. Sounds like a plan. And it was really wild, too, at the time, because I had randomly received this call from a real estate broker, and they said, hey, do you want to come in to our office? I can basically mentor you for this next year. You can get your license. You can hang it up with us after you graduate the program, and we can take care of you. And I was like, this is random, and right after the time that I didn't get into grad school, so I guess I'm going to pursue it. And just within that same week, my mother, who is a Psychology Today editor, ended up editing one of your, Dr. Ambar's blogs on college, basically, and how to make the most out of the experience. And in the end of that blog, he had talked about how his office was across the street from UCSD and how basically he would be interested to take on any mentees. And my mom wrote him that I had just graduated neuroscience, that I was interesting, and that we should meet. And we hit it off. We hit off that we had animals. You bred guinea pigs. You bred guinea pigs. I bred chickens. We both have fish. We both love the synchronicities of the world. We both love academics. We hit it off right away, and I was like, okay, this is definitely the right place for me to be over the next gap year, shall we say. And so, either way, though, I'm at a crossroads. I'm like, I'm going to go headfirst into something. I'm either going to go headfirst into this real estate biz, which is a dark path that I have no idea what it's going to entail, but I'm down for it, or I'm going to keep going with the trajectory that I was just on, but down a slightly different route, which is clinical work. And so I go down the clinical work path, and this is where like I discussed before, I find complete and total sense of peace within my soul, I would say. Watching kids grow over the last 8 months that I've been working at Centerpoint, and watching myself grow as a result of just being around all of these kind, amazing, and brilliant souls has been amazing. And it's shown me that I want to work with kids. I want to work with people. I want to be able to discuss psychology and imprint this knowledge into a new set of people every day. And I think that therapy is a perfect way to do that.
But if we go back 8 months, when you apply to only one school, and by the way, to our listening audience, that's not a good plan. Apply to the world, you want to apply to multiple schools, because even though the school might seem perfect to you, chances are they may not think the same about you. And so if you want to move forward, you want to give yourself lots of opportunities, and then have faith that life will take you where you need to go. And then the other lesson here, I think it's worth underscoring, is that when things go wrong, when things don't go with the way you want them to go, that's not only is that not the end of the world, then maybe that's the way it's supposed to be. Maybe you'll grow in unexpected ways. And be sure to be open to those unexpected ways. So I always use the quote given by Alexander Graham Bell that when one door closes, another one opens. And the rest of the quote is, some people look so longingly at the door that's closed, they never even look for the open door. And the lesson I like to impart is, when things stop you, look for an open door. It's always there. Sometimes you have to look at it a little bit. Sometimes it just opens up for you, like happens to you, Max. The door just opened. But you have to take a leap forward. You might say, no, I've decided to become a realtor. I'm not going to look back. It's still a choice whether you're going to explore the door. But as they say, when opportunity knocks, answer. The other saying that's also useful is, if you can't find a door, build one.
Very true. Very true. Because if you can't see one, there is always one to be built right around you. You just have to look. I like that.
Over the past year, you've also continued to pursue your other interests. And talk to me a little bit about the balance in your life, because I think that's important to keep up throughout your pre-career time as well as during your career. How are you balancing your life these days?
Yeah, so I have to organize my day pretty regimented. I have my free time listed. I have my girlfriend time listed. I have friend time listed. I have family time. And then, of course, I have all of my various jobs, which I have like four different jobs. And I think it's important to have multiple jobs also, because if you're only investing, I don't know, 30, 40 hours a week in one place, that is also going to burn you out. So I'll say there's a few things, right? My various positions have different expectations of me. So, for instance, this position with you, I would say, has the greatest expectations of me. I have a lot of writing that I do, which is something that I can do both in and outside of the office. And then I have my TA job, which has medium amount of expectations. There's a lot of students who depend on me, but it's not like I have to be in daily communication with any particular person. And then a step further from that is this job that I just got as a music teacher at a school, which is 3 days a week, and I have to, of course, plan prep time, so I have to make sure that that's balanced in my schedule, because, as we know, teachers do not teach inside the classroom, but are constantly preparing for lesson plans outside. And then I have various freelance work that I assist my mother with, including researching for articles and databases. So I have to plan all these segments of my life. And so I think the most important thing is balancing that with stuff that has absolutely nothing to do with any of it. And so my number one favorite way to spend my free time is with my band. We practice about once a week, and we play 2 to 3 shows per month. And that's just a complete escape. When we're together, it's my little brother on drums and my best friend since high school on bass. And if we weren't playing music, we'd just be hanging out, listening to records together, looking at my fish tanks, and eating burritos, because we all live busy lives, and it's important that we have that escape from the never-ending business. And we just spend that time to engage with each other, engage with music, and just, enjoy life.
Yeah, so I think that the balance is so important, because if one part of your life brings you down, another part can bring you up.
And yeah.
So that's so important to maintain balance and not just put all your eggs in one basket, as we've discussed. So when we come back, we're going to summarize some take-home lessons for today's discussion, but I think it's been fascinating for me. We'll have to do another show so I can share some of my experiences, which in some ways parallel your own in terms of lessons learned, but I think it's always good to hear a second version of the same story and see what you can pick out of it. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com. or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar, special guest, Mac Lancaster. We've been talking about picking a career, how to find the right thing, how to maintain balance. And so I published a blog recently on Psychology Today about 9 tips to consider when choosing a career. And I'm just going to go over the 9 tips, some of which we've already addressed in the show. So the first one is take a broad-based education curriculum. As discussed earlier, especially if you're in your teens, you've not been exposed to everything life, well, you're never exposed to everything life has to offer, but you have had very limited exposure to things you might be very interested in. So it's a good idea to take a broad-based education. Second tip, when you're trying to pick a career, is look at other people in that field and ask yourself, does my personality match who I see? So in Mac's case, meeting me, he said, oh, I want to do this. So that's a good green flag, if you would. For myself, when I was thinking about pediatrics as a career, I saw the pediatricians like to get down on the floor and play with kids, and I said, I like to do that. But an internist, somebody who's just doing adult medicine, would never consider doing such a thing. So I would not be as happy, or less likely to be happy as an internist, as an example. The third tip is listen to your mind and your heart. Mac alluded to that. Sometimes something seems really right, but not feels right, but seems right as a correct choice, like research. But when you do it, your heart doesn't like it. So if you know ahead of time, your heart's saying, I'm not quite sure about doing that, make sure that the career you pick makes sense both intellectually and emotionally. The fourth tip is be flexible. Go with the flow. The life has a wonderful way of taking you where you need to go. At least that's my belief system. So if you subscribe to that belief, and when life opens a door you didn't expect, go in and check it out. When Mac did not get into the one school he applied to, he started looking for other doors, and then he found the Center Point Medicine door, and that seemed to fit him really well. If he was not flexible, if he said, well, I'm just going to go forward with my real estate plans, his life would take a very different course. So I think oftentimes life gives us opportunities, and the people who end up being happiest are the ones, in my mind, who look at opportunities with an open mind and actually seize them. The fifth tip is it's not about the money. So Mac actually threw that a bit. Oh, I can make lots of money in real estate. But it's not about the money. If you don't like it, if it's just a chore, that's going to be a long time. You're going to be doing things you don't really like. And unfortunately, I think many people in this country or in the world end up doing a job they don't particularly like, but they want to get the money, and then they live their life out of the job, outside of the job. And, some people aren't as fortunate as Mac and I to have be able to find jobs that we love, but if you're at a decision-making point and you have a choice between a job you love, which makes less money, and a job you don't like that makes more money, take the job you love. Because if you're unhappy, that takes a toll mentally, physically, and you just have not as happy a life.
Yeah.
And remember the adage, if you love your job, you never work a day in your life. That was something Confucius said, actually. It's a well-known secret, if you would. The sixth tip was few people become superstars. And we talked about that earlier, about the YouTubers and stuff. So you want to have, sure, go for it. If you have a dream of being a streamer, go for it. But be aware of the difficulties and have a backup plan. Or go in two different directions just to make sure you have something good at the end. The seventh tip is, remember, your first job is not your last. So the average person changes a career 5 times in their lifetime. 5 times. So you're making a decision right now for what you want to do in the next 5 or 10 years. And after that, some people recommend switching jobs every 10 years because it keeps you fresh. I won't go quite that far, but I will tell you that as we describe my life experiences, within medicine I've changed gears 5 times, interestingly enough. And it does indeed keep you fresh. So when people fret, am I choosing the right job, I have to make a perfect choice, remember, it's not your last job. And what seems perfect now may not be perfect in 10 years. So just take what makes sense now and then go forward. Go with the flow. Eighth tip is to find a career that keeps you learning and stimulated. So important. Lifelong learning, so important to keep you alive and keep you creative and help you feel good about yourself. And that really extends throughout life. I think some people talk about retirement at the end of their career. That's cool, but make sure you're doing something that has a purpose and meaning and stimulates you even after retirement. I can tell you in my career, I don't even conceive of retirement because what I do day to day is so much fun. When you don't have something that stimulates you, when you don't have something that helps you be creative and makes life worth living, when you get to an older age, you die. You stop. And that studies have shown that engagement and having social life and having reason to live prolongs people's lives. And the last tip is, which we've talked about some already, is maintaining balance. Because you want to have a balance, for example, between your family life, if you're fortunate enough to have a family, and your career. You don't want to give one up for the other because it'll keep you, again, mentally healthy and physically healthy, because mental and physical are connected. So those are the 9 tips. That was another Psychology Today blog. We keep talking about blogs in Psychology Today. How do you react, Mac?
I love those. And, I mean, that last one really reminds me of my first point, which is to have something that you hold sacred. And for me, that's music. And for many people, it's religion, right? For many people, it could just be their hobby. But I think it's important to have that one thing that is solely isolated that you can put up on a pedestal, because we as human beings have something to put on a pedestal that you can say, this is my purpose outside of making money. This is what gives me fulfillment on this planet. Even if your job gives you fulfillment, I think it's so important to have something else that you can carry with you, that you can use to make you a more well-rounded person, and that will not ever be tainted by the world or competition or money or any of it. So I know that you have your faith and that you use that to be a better practitioner and to be a better individual. So I'm sure that that applies for you, is the Jewish faith, as having a sacred separate part from your career. But yeah, I think it's important that to understand that that can be anything, right? Like, I would say having fish for me is also a very, and all of my chickens, right? All of my pets. So I would take that as the, or I would say that that's the final piece of advice here, is look for something that can give your life meaning and allow it to be meaningful, allow it to be sacred.
Right. And if you're lucky enough, though, you can take that and mix the two sometimes. So,
absolutely.
You know, I bring my Jewish faith into therapy. You can bring your music into this, even music therapy. And you can use music to help calm people, as an example. So we'll have a lot more to talk about. There's going to be another whole show on the same topic. I'm really glad people had a chance to join us today. Mac, thank you so much for being a co-host. This is Center Point with Dr. Ron Anbar.